Despite demand in the labor market for the skills the trade schools provide, many parents and teachers still push for four-year college. Wes Amer wants to change the perception around trade school.
It's okay for a kid to go on a vocational. It's not a second option. It's the student's first option. It's what they're passionate about. It's what they want to do. And we have to show the parents the same thing.
But first, a new year also means new laws. This year, more than 250 new laws took effect here in Illinois, including some you might not realize.
You've probably seen the highlighter-like orange color hunters have to wear when they go out hunting with firearms. Illinois hunters will now be allowed to go hunting in bright pink gear as well.
That's NPR Illinois' Sam Dunklaw. He joins us. The 21st gets started just after the latest news. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and happy new year. And may I say, welcome to 2019. We've got a lot planned for you this hour. For those of you who are resolving to renew your focus on diet and exercise in this new year, we'll have a dietitian and kinesiologist on hand to answer your questions. And at the stroke of midnight on January 1st, more than 250 new laws took effect here in Illinois. Everything from new gun legislation to the legalization of hemp to new public safety measures are included. What changes should you have on your radar? That's coming up. But first, if you're a Bears fan, man, I don't know what to say. The Chicago Bears had such a great run that ended last night. It all came down to the last 10 seconds of the game when the Bears were hoping for a field goal that would win it.
Kicking toward the north end zone at Soldier Field. 3 for 3 on the day. 10 seconds to go. Parkey lines it up. O'Donnell on one knee. Gives him a look. Extends his right arm. Scales sends it back. Placement made. Kick by Parkey. The 43. And it hit the upright. It is no good on the crossbar. And the Eagles are celebrating here at Soldier Field.
Oh, I'm sorry to replay that moment for those of you who hadn't heard that last night, that audio from WBBM in Chicago. But we wanted to say, even though we know it's not much consolation this morning, what a great season the Chicago Bears had. Boo, Eagles. Mark Maxwell is the Capital Bureau Chief for WCIA 3. He's online with us now from Springfield, along with Sam Dunklaw, who's a reporter for NPR Illinois. Hey, guys, welcome to the 21st. How are you guys doing this morning?
Oh, Nyla, my morning was headed in such a good direction, and then you had to dredge up last night. But
I'm sorry.
good to be back with you again.
I'm sorry to say I have to agree with Mark there, but very good to be with you, Nyla, this morning.
All right. Well, I wanted to acknowledge the Bears season. Maybe that was not the right way to do it, but I was like, it was a good season, nonetheless.
It was. It was just such a fascinating season. They went from worst to first, and it was exciting for everyone, and then to end in such a painful way. That's going to sting for a while.
It really is. So before we get to new laws, Mark, can I ask you another big Chicago story? Last week, there was news around one of the city's most famous and powerful politicians. That's Alderman Ed Burke. Last week, federal charges came out against him. Officials are accusing him of attempted extortion. And this has had ripple effects all the way to the Chicago mayoral race. I know it's the talk of the town in Chicago. His wife, Ann Burke, is an Illinois Supreme Court justice. Mark, I just wanted to ask how people, you think, for example, people in Springfield are reacting to this story.
Well, perhaps through a secondary ripple effect, but also through just the fascination of covering and watching the developments that come out of Chicago politics. Because here we have, once again, FBI wiretaps involved in a very powerful political, you know, power broker. The FBI was surveilling and spying on, essentially, a sitting alderman, Ed Burke, who, as you mentioned, his wife is sitting on the Illinois State Supreme Court right now, his brother just now stepping down from a long tenure in the State House, and he comes from a political family. His father was a clouded member of the Chicago political system. Some say he's one of the last remaining figures of the so-called machine, the Chicago political machine that has existed and really is a remnant of Mayor Richard J. Daley's time there. So he is accused of trying to shake down a company that owns several Burger King franchises for $10,000 in campaign cash and threatening to withhold or delay building permits and licensing permits to repair a driveway there if the business owner wouldn't comply. And the federal government, in a 30-some page indictment, said that he crossed a line. And Burke maintains his innocence that he didn't do anything wrong. This is just politics as usual.
Yeah, so it's a story that lots of folks will be continuing to follow, obviously. I just wanted to mention that just because it's been such big news. So let's go into some of the new state laws. There's actually 253 new laws that took effect on January 1st. Mark, is that pretty typical every year?
Believe it or not, it is. I think that hundreds of new laws get passed, but it's the controversial ones that draws most of the attention. So a lot of these are technical rule changes. Some of them deal with very complicated issues in the weeds, dealing with small minor changes here and there. But certainly, you know, every legislature goes through. And I think that if they were to give you an honest moment, the state lawmakers, they say, you know, we don't get enough credit for all the things we do get done in some of these periphery issues. But, yes, yeah, so this is a pretty general workload, I think, for the state house to pass this many bills through. And, there's just a lot of sifting through, and reporters have been doing a lot of that over the holidays, reading through state law to see what new things are coming about.
We're talking to two of the reporters who have been doing that. Mark Maxwell is the Capitol Bureau Chief for WCIA. Sam Dunklaw is also with us with WUIS in Springfield. And Sam, let's get to some of these, in particular the issue of gun violence. When we're thinking about 2018, the context of school shootings like Parkland, that was a big topic of conversation last year. Lawmakers did move on several fronts. What changes will we now see take effect here in Illinois when it comes to gun control legislation?
Yeah, sure. There's a couple of them, and both of them were decently controversial, kind of springboarding off of what Mark was talking about there. And these got a lot of coverage during session. They have been talked about a lot. But the two main ones are the 72-hour wait period on guns that used to only apply just to handguns. But now that's going to apply to other guns like shotguns and rifles, those guns that are particularly popular and typical among people who hunt. You're now going to have to wait at least 3 days before you pick one of those up. It's been called a cooling off period by supporters for a reason. You know, it's designed to thwart somebody who's thinking about committing a crime of passion, or in an instance like Parkland, a mass shooting. It allows shops to run more of a background, and it allows somebody who's thinking about perpetrating a crime like that. It forces them into this sort of waiting period to wait, to hold off, and to possibly think about doing something else. The other big one that passed is this lethal order of protection. And Nyla, you had mentioned Parkland. Police had received some 18 calls about Parkland shooter Nicholas Cruz. One component of the complaints that were lodged against him was that he had access to guns, and police really didn't do much of anything. A lot of people have pointed to incompetence on law enforcement in that particular regard. But they really couldn't do much of anything because, you know, you need a warrant to enter somebody's property, to search someone's property, to confiscate someone's property. Now in Illinois, that is not going to be the case. The idea with this law, as a state representative, Kathleen Willis, who was the sponsor on this bill in the House, told me, it's to prevent from what happened in Florida to happen in Illinois. Friends or family members or police can go to a court and ask to take someone's guns away if that person is considered legally dangerous. And that can happen for up to 6 months. A big component of a lot of these gun laws is where the Second Amendment fits into all this. So I asked State Representative Jonathan Carroll about how the Second Amendment ties into this new gun legislation. And he had said he respects the right to bear arms and that neither of these laws are aimed at taking guns away from those that legally obtain them and use them for legal purposes.
And it's up to a court, obviously. So it's a process of having a court determine whether or not someone's gun should be taken away from them.
Right, correct. And if you, in fact, lie to a court, you can be guilty of perjury. So there is that legal penalty that is also incurred when you're dealing with a court.
And Sam, just sticking with this topic of school safety, which is a part of the gun discussion conversation, as we've referenced, for example, Parkland, unfortunately, so many school shootings that happened last year. What are the changes in Illinois in terms of school safety and what schools are doing to be prepared?
Yeah, so when I had called on this, I spoke with Senator Julie Morrison on it, and she had mentioned that this was already law. The idea that a school must participate in at least one active shooter safety drill a year. it was already the law. A lot of schools around the state of Illinois already have plans in place, lockdown drills, things of that nature. This new law kind of clarifies a couple of technicalities, some questions that school districts have brought up. Students who are, for example, emotionally sensitive to something like a mass shooting drill can, in fact, opt out of that if they wish, if they get district permission. And police departments, local police departments, have to coordinate with a local school district in order to set these drills up. Senator Morrison, when she was talking to me, had said that, you know, schools have enough on their plates as it is when you're talking about educating Illinois children. And they shouldn't be alone in planning, you know, a mass shooting, or at least planning for a mass shooting. Coordinating with local police departments is something that is now in stone. And school districts will have to take the time to do that.
Right. It's an unfortunate, but it seems like a good preparation for the reality. That's Sam Dunklaw. He's with NPR Illinois. Mark Maxwell is also with us from WCIA 3. Mark, I think when we think about the conversations we had in 2018, we also had a lot of conversations about sexual assault and how they are handled. And now there are some changes to how Illinois will handle sexual assault cases, especially when it comes to higher education.
That's true. And if I can just use that as sort of a sideways asterisk here to add a new footnote breaking, I think, just in the last few moments. A lot of pressure was on the State House to reform in the issue of sexual harassment, in the lane of sexual harassment, because of many of the issues and allegations that were made at the State House. One of the people accused of harassment was Deputy Majority Leader Representative Liu Lang.
Mm-hmm.
He announced his stepping down from his position of authority last year, but staying in the State House. He just now announced in the last few moments here that he's resigning from the State House, joining a lobbying firm.
And wow.
That's just another little bit of news.
Thanks for breaking in with that breaking news. No, that's important. I mean, Mark, and I think that may come as a surprise to lots of folks in Springfield, right?
Well, Liu Lang was no doubt one of the most influential lawmakers in Springfield, and he was a fierce defender of Speaker Michael Madigan, along with Representative Barbara Flynn Curry, who is also retiring. So he's one of the most fierce defenders of Speaker Madigan, a very loyal sort of lieutenant, if you will. And he just, again, announced his retirement after sort of a troubled last year of his legislative career, but he will stay in Springfield as a lobbyist. But to your other question, yes, that and several other allegations put a lot of pressure on this State House in the closing portion of last year to update the sexual harassment policies. These extend to any companies that do business with the state. They now must have a sexual harassment policy in place. You mentioned higher education. So there's a lot of stronger enforcement mechanisms that are in place, but it's important to also bear in mind that colleges and higher education places are just now starting to implement these new laws. So there may be a learning curve, and there may be some growing pains along with that as they start to try these new laws on for size.
And so we've talked about gun control, we've talked about sexual assault, we've talked about school safety. Sam, back in November, Michigan became the first Midwestern state to legalize recreational marijuana. Since then, there's been some speculation that Illinois could be next. And as of January 1st, the crop hemp is now legal in Illinois. Hemp was also included in the federal farm bill, which we saw pass a few months ago. How is this legislation different in terms of Illinois and hemp now?
Sure. The big difference is really how it's administered by the state of Illinois. And that was one of the conditions of federal legalization. It becomes a sort of, I don't want to say states' rights, but at least states have to determine their own rules for how they'll grow hemp. The state of Kentucky not too long ago also went through the similar process, and now farmers in Kentucky are growing hemp. Illinois is now going to be next. My colleague Jacqueline Driscoll did a lot of reporting on this, and earlier last week she had reported that the Illinois Department of Ag finally put some proposed rules. They're now published. They're up for farmers to have a look at. For any farmer that wants to grow hemp, they can have a look at these rules, and here's what you're going to have to do if you want to grow hemp in the state of Illinois. You have to be approved by the state. The exact details of that are still sort of being debated about. There's a public comment period that is now open. Folks can talk about what that approval process looks like. You have to pay something like $1,000 in fees total if you want to grow this crop, so you have to sort of put it's a significant investment in forward just in fees if you want to grow this crop. You also have to pay to get your crop tested. That's not something that the state will cover. You have to cover that out of your own pocket. And what you're testing for is THC levels. So hemp is a crop that has almost no THC in it, virtually none. And that's what makes it usable in products like clothing and rope. So when you test a hemp plant, you're determining whether or not it has that low, that bare minimum THC level. That's what separates it from its cousin, recreational marijuana. And like I said, these rules now are going through a public comment period. The department will allow folks to chime in on how this crop should be regulated, where it's going to be grown, how many acres you're going to be able to put in the ground. And then shortly after that, they'll go back and then they'll publish what they finally come up with.
Well, it'd be interesting. I know folks who are interested in legalizing marijuana are paying close attention to that. We just have about a minute or two left, so I just want to end by asking both of you. Mark, let's start with you. As we look ahead to this new legislature and a new governor, J.B. Pritzker, who will be inaugurated next Monday, and I know to our listeners, we will be live. The 21st will be live in Springfield, bringing that to you next Monday. What do you all have? What expectations do you have for new legislation as Governor-elect Pritzker enters office and as we look at this somewhat changed state house? Mark?
Well, Governor-elect Pritzker has made it clear that raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour is at the top of his agenda. That won't happen overnight. Even after the new law passes, should it get the votes to pass, and of course it would get his signature, it would take some 5 years or so to reach that $15 threshold. But he wants to do that statewide, and there will be some opposition from business groups and retailers who say that smaller businesses can't afford that higher overhead. But he campaigned on that issue, and we expect to see that to be one of the immediate focuses of his new incoming administration.
Right. So that's one thing we'll be keeping an eye on. Sam, and we're almost out of time. Is there one thing you can name that you also think you'll be looking forward to with legislation?
Yeah. One more thing really quickly. Pritzker has talked a lot about a capital bill. He mentioned that towards the tail end of the campaign. We've heard a lot about that. If a capital bill does come through, we're probably looking at something that's focused on roads and bridges, not your traditional capital bill. We could be seeing that coming out in the first couple of months as well.
That's Sam Dunklaw with NPR Illinois in Springfield. I want to thank Mark Maxwell as well, Capital Bureau Chief for WCIA3. Guys, thanks for being with me. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Natalie. You too.
Happy New Year to you.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Even though the demand for skilled workers is growing and expanding to new fields, many high school teachers, guidance counselors, and parents continue to push college over trade school. Although college graduates do earn more than their peers without a degree, trade school is a good option for many. And with increased federal and state funding and support from lawmakers, trade school teachers and students are working on changing the thought process around this type of education. For more on trade schools, we're joined on the line now by Eugene Phillips. He's an 18-year-old senior at Capital Area Career Center in Springfield. Hi, Eugene. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Eugene, what are you studying right now?
At CACC, I study Cisco networking.
Is that computer systems? What does that mean?
That means managing routers and networks for business level and office level situations. It also means securing devices from intruders.
And how did you decide to pick this course of study, Eugene?
I was already decided when I found out about CACC what I wanted to do, because I've always been interested in the technical side of things, computers and games and such. So I decided to go to CACC when I heard from others about what CACC has to offer.
Who did you first hear about it from?
Other students at my school. At my school, it's popular, but no one had at SHS had taken Cisco Networking's program, because the other programs are more popular. So I figured that I would just take it, and then I would have my own personal opinion about what the class has to offer. I feel like a lot of the people I had talked to who had gone to other schools said it wasn't what they thought it would be, and that it was kind of hardish, but I didn't think it would be too bad, so I just went ahead and took it.
And so when you said SHS, that's Springfield High School, right?
Correct.
And do you feel like most of the conversation among teachers is about attending college or preparing for college? How many people are talking about places like CACC?
None.
Oh, and what about your parents? Was that a conversation your parents had talked to you about?
Not really. I talked to them about college before, but not. I didn't have any conversation about going to CACC beforehand. It was more of a, I told them that there was a program out there that I was interested in, and then they were like, well, that's cool. I think you should have some experience in whatever field you plan to go into.
Do you wish it was more of a conversation in high school?
Not necessarily, but I think that at our school, at least, I feel like schools are trying to push students to take AP classes so that way the schools get more credit or more grants for having kids that are earning credits in these areas. And I feel like there's more of a pressure on schools to have them get high SAT and ACT scores because that sets a metric for how a school represents its students getting prepared to go to college. And unfortunately, that's how it's seen as from a parental view and a district-wide view from the administrators.
But Eugene, your view is you see attending CACC kind of like taking an AP class, right? Because you're seeing this as preparation eventually for getting a degree?
I think that it has its benefits I think if there's benefits to go to CACC than there are to stay in a classroom which does not pertain to something you would rather go into, because I had the option of taking just three more electives and staying at my home school. But when I found out that I could get a certification at CACC, to me, it seemed like an opportunity.
We've been talking with Eugene Phillips, who's a student, as he's telling us a little bit about Capital Area Career Center in Springfield. We've got a few more folks with us now, including the principal of CACC, Wesley Amer, and the person who introduced these folks to us, Illinois Newsroom reporter Mary Hansen. The Illinois Newsroom is a statewide reporting collaboration between Illinois public radio stations, and Mary's with us now from Springfield. Principal Amer, Mary, welcome to the 21st. Thanks also for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Principal Amer, I wonder if I can just start with you, if you can explain, Eugene is explaining how he ended up at CACC. What are the typical students there like, and what are you hoping they will do after they leave you?
Well, I think Capital Area Career Center serves a couple different ways for students. One is a way for students to explore what programs that they could go into. So some students aren't exactly sure what they want to do after school. And now there's 19 programs at Capital Area Career Center, and then students can come out here and see if that's exactly what program that they want to go into. And also, their students know exactly what they want to go on to. They know that college is not the option that they want to take. So they come out here, go ahead and start those skill set, and then that skill set can lead them to maybe Lincoln Land for a couple more years of training, or they can go directly into the workforce.
I think there are people, Principal Amer, who are listening to this thinking about the term vocational school and trying to understand if this is the same thing. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, vocational and career tech ed is sort of interchangeable, I guess. I mean, we are teaching students, getting them certifications, and that's an important part. They're actually getting certifications at Capital Area Career Center, so when they go out into the workforce, the employers know that they have some skills to be ready to do the job that they need to perform at.
Well, and I wonder if part of the terminology, the language we use, also has to do with the way we think about things. Principal Amer, do you think that we need to reframe? Like, I'm thinking about Eugene saying no one at his high school really talked about going someplace other than college. How do you think we need to reframe that conversation?
Well, I think the first thing we have to look at, we have to change our mindset and look at it not that college or vocational center is an alternative to college, but it's another way for a student to reach their goal. You have students that go to college for 4 years to get a degree and whatever they decide they want to go into, We also have kids that go into the vocational trades such as carpentry, plumbing, HVAC, welding, and they also are getting high-tech training for 3, 4, 5 years. It's just a different way, but at the end, they're both reaching the goal that they want to reach. So I think the first thing, like I said, it's a mindset that the communities and people have that if you don't go to college, then I guess the next best option is vocational, and that's not the case. There's a lot of kids in this world that that's what they want to do. They want to go into a vocation. College is not the option that they want to take.
That's the principal of the Capital Area Career Center in Springfield, Wes Eamer. Mary Hansen is with us as well. She's been reporting on this for the Illinois Newsroom. Mary, to Principal Eamer's point about this mindset changing, are we seeing a mindset change among our lawmakers in terms of how they're approaching funding this?
Yeah, so we heard, first we heard on the campaign trail a lot of kind of discussion from Governor-elect Pritzker about his support for funding vocational programs. And as well as on the federal level, Congress last summer reauthorized funding for career and technical education at both the high school level and community college level. So I think we are seeing a little bit more support, a little bit more discussion of how vocational training could be another option for students.
And Mary, how much do you think this is a reflection of the change in the way that we look at our needs in our labor force and how much that is changing?
Lawmakers and economic development folks definitely connect it directly to that, particularly, you know, there are a few areas or a few industries, you know, talk about construction trades, looking at, you know, potential, you know, gap there in the number of workers that are needed. You know, we've seen skilled workers retiring and kind of hoping that, you know, having those jobs available, having more of those jobs available and wanting to make sure that we have the skilled workers who are, you know, who would qualify for those good jobs. And there's similar issues, you know, in healthcare and in information technology as well.
And Principal Eamer, do you think that there's an understanding among our communities that if the traditional way that I think a lot of people have looked at things is you go to college, you get a 4-year degree, then you get a job. I wonder how much our current labor market needs have changed. If you think other people are aware of this, like we've been talking about how lawmakers are, there's a growing awareness among lawmakers. Do you think that people are seeing this as more, are aware of this?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Mike Rowe has talked about the skills gap a lot. You're starting to see it on the federal level again, mentioned again, and they're using the word the skills gap. We do have a lot of employers that are coming to Capital Area Career Center, and their first thing is they cannot find people to fill manufacturing jobs, to fill welding jobs, and this is just the start of it. So I think it's going to get worse before it gets better because there's not enough people that are trained correctly in the pipeline to be able to fill those jobs that are needed in this community.
Mary, when we're thinking about a change, Principal Eamer was talking about Mike Rowe, dirty jobs, like when we're thinking about pop culture or with the way that people are experiencing jobs, like when we think about advanced manufacturing, do you think there's enough awareness among the community about jobs and what those jobs, the kind of education those jobs require now? As you've said, Mary, a lot of manufacturing jobs require pretty advanced computer knowledge and different sorts of skill sets maybe might not associate typically with kind of an older school version of manufacturing jobs.
Yeah, I think there is still some stigma or some kind of misunderstanding, particularly when it comes to the training that's required for these jobs. And the economic development folks that I've talked to have said, you know, there needs to be better relationships between college, community colleges or training centers like CACC and those who are who need the employers or excuse me, who need the employees. These companies need to kind of better express what it is, what skills, what particular training that they're looking for students to have or for, you know, potential employees to have. So kind of making those better connections between education and the workforce.
Principal Eamer, how many students do you have at the Capital Area Career Center?
Approximately 700 students come here every day.
And do you feel like you're getting enough funding and support from the state? When I'm thinking about everything from the state government to the State Board of Education?
Yeah, I mean, we could always use more funding. That would definitely help. I think one need that we have is we have great teachers that come in with a wealth of knowledge in their particular program that they teach, but they could use some support on the actual teaching side of it, and if we had some money for that, that would be great. Also, lawmakers, and it's not their fault, but, you know, there's mandates that are always put on academic classes, and those mandates sometimes lead to burdens because there is a long period of time that students have to be out here a day. And if there is a lot of academic mandates, that sort of restricts the student's schedule. And sometimes a kid is unable to come out to a career center because of the fact that they cannot fit in their schedule.
Mm. So there's some practical things that could be done, it sounds like, to make this easier for students to attend.
Definitely. You know, there's students that need this training and they're unable to get that training because of some state mandates that have been set by legislators.
I wanted to end by asking all of you about student loans. And I think when we think about the amount of student debt that we're seeing with students who are attending four-year college programs or longer, how much do you think that might change this conversation? People thinking about weighing the amount of money that they have to invest in a college education and looking at their earnings and making sure they're picking the right school, studying the right things. Mary, has that been part of the conversation?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think from some of the both, I think, Wes, you mentioned this in our conversation and other conversations with career and technical education folks is, you know, when you look at, you know, the potential earnings for these skilled labor jobs, kind of weighing that with, you know, against a four-year, you know, with the average that somebody would make with a four-year degree, you know, sometimes we haven't historically taken into account, you know, how much debt you come out with. So trying to get students to think about that or, you know, educators to think about that, kind of weighing those options, whether you come out with a, you know, a certification or certain training to get a job right out of high school versus, you know, graduating with a four-year degree but having, you know, tens of thousands of dollars or thousands of dollars worth of debt. So that's starting to become more a part of the conversation.
Principal Amer, I wonder how much this is a consideration for other students at CACC.
I definitely think it's a consideration. I think, you know, the public and community are definitely looking at it differently than we did 10 years ago. Unfortunately, and this isn't the case for all, but we do have students that come out of colleges with, you know, 2 or 4 years worth of college, and they have student loan debt, and they're unable to find a career in that field, and they end up, you know, doing something totally different. But I think the thing that we have to do is, you know, not only here at CACC, but all surrounding schools, is to educate kids that, one, it's okay to go into vocation, two, it's okay to go to college, three, it's okay to go to military, whatever you're passionate about. Make sure they are making an informed decision and they see the big picture. You know, if you go to a four-year college and it costs you $200,000 to go there, your return on investment is going to be X compared to if you go to a trade school and the trade school is going to pay for your college and your training. This is how much money you're going to make down the road. And, you know, are you going to be happy with that? Are you going to be able to support a family with that? I think we have to do a better job of showing students the big picture and not just what's going to happen 2 and 4 years down the road, but what's going to happen 15, 20, and 30 years down the road.
Principal Amer, how do you want parents to be thinking about this?
I think it's the same thing. I think we have to educate parents as well, both here at Capillary Career Center and at the serving schools that we have, that, one, it's okay for a kid to go on a vocational. It's not a second option. It's the student's first option. It's what they're passionate about. It's what they want to do. And it's okay. And we have to show the parents the same thing. You know, if the student gets this training, this is what their potential is going to be. This is what they're going to be able to make for a living compared to if they decide to go to a 2-year or 4-year university and their debt and all how that all is going to play out in the long run.
That's Wes Amer. He's the principal of Capital Area Career Center in Springfield. I want to thank Eugene Phillips, who's a senior, an 18-year-old senior studying, as he's been telling us, about computer networking. Mary Hansen has been with us as well, reporting on this for WUIS in Springfield. We will tweet out Mary's stories on this. But I want to thank all of you for taking the time to speak with me. Mary, Wes, Eugene, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for tuning in, and Happy New Year if you're just tuning in. This may be the week many of you have decided to start working hard at your New Year's resolutions, perhaps trying to eat better and exercise more, something that's obviously easier said than done. We were hoping to help you out a little bit, so we've lined up a few folks here to answer your questions and talk about diet and exercise and fitness. Stephen Petrozello teaches in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health here at the University of Illinois. He's in studio with me here in Urbana. Cindy Yerkler is a registered dietitian at SIU School of Medicine. She's on the line from Springfield. Cindy, Stephen, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here with me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Glad to be here.
Hi, Nyla. Happy New Year.
Thanks for both of you for being here. And by the way, for our audience, if you've got questions for Cindy and Stephen, especially about nutrition or exercise, and especially when it comes to your New Year's resolutions, give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can tweet us as well. Our handle is 21stshow. So it's January. Lots of people make a promise to lose weight this time of year and oftentimes do not have a lot of success. So I think the first question that I have that I think a lot of people have is, should you focus more on diet or on exercise? And I don't know if both of you are going to have the same or different answer to this. Stephen, let's start with you.
Yes, you should focus on both. You know, having kind of grown up academically studying exercise and the effects of exercise, I'm kind of biased towards exercise as a primary strategy in weight loss, but it's not the only thing. You know, a lot of people will say that, you know, you really kind of, whatever you're doing in the gym can easily be lost in the kitchen. So I think it's really important to focus on both. I obviously have, in terms of my experience, would lean a little more towards exercise, but I have a suspicion Cindy might lean a little bit more towards the nutrition side of things.
Cindy?
Well, I agree with Stephen that it has to be both for long-term success, but I would say that most people cannot outrun what they can eat these days. If you think about how big the eating is, if you've noticed calorie information on menus, people are sometimes eating, you know, 1,500 calorie meals twice a day. That's just lunch and dinner. There has to be a diet element, a food element involved. But for long-term maintenance of weight loss, there absolutely has to be exercise. And just the very aspect that exercise is so essential to good health, I would tell people it needs to be there from the beginning, both.
So we're going to talk about both of those. We're going to get into some of the I was just in Miami. Lots of people are talking about the keto diet in Miami. I want to ask you about that in a second, Cindy. But let's just stay with fitness for a moment. Stephen, so let's say you're someone who hasn't exercised in a while, or maybe for a long time, or maybe really never. What do you recommend they do before hitting the gym or joining a gym? Because this is a time of year that there's also all these specials, and the gym is very crowded in January.
Yes. Well, first thing I would say is you don't necessarily have to join a gym. There are lots of different kinds of activities that people can engage in, especially if they've been inactive for a long time. You know, certainly getting information is always important, but, you know, where do you go for good information? The internet is full of information, and not
bad
all of it
information,
is good.
Especially when it comes to exercise
exactly.
And food, right?
And I think people, especially starting out, you know, there tends to be an overemphasis on appearance and exercising to look a certain way. One of the classes I teach at the university, I asked the students a question. I said, what does fit look like? You know, you look at an elite marathon runner and compare that to a power lifter. They're both fit, and they're very good at what they do, but is one more fit than the other? And, you know, there isn't an ideal body, you know, an appearance that is ideal, even though, you know, internet, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, everybody will show you what ideal is. But, you know, you've got to work. You're kind of limited by what you're born with. Your genetics are going to limit what you can do to a large extent. But the first thing is really just kind of getting as good of information as you can, being a kind of a smart consumer of what you are seeing in terms of that information, and getting it from multiple sources, I think, as well, so you can get a better sense of what is good advice versus what's just pseudoscience, so to speak.
And how do you distinguish between what's reputable and what's not when it comes? Because everyone sees so many studies.
Yeah.
And they see a scientific study and it says do this. And then, in fact, I was having a whole conversation with a friend actually about the keto diet. And he said, I wasn't going to do it, but then I read the study about it. And I read the study about how it actually has these beneficial health benefits. So now I'm doing it.
Yeah. You know, and I think in terms of exercise and fitness, we've been our own worst enemy, because the message that the kind of the main scientific bodies in the exercise domain have given the public keeps changing. And then people are like, well, what am I supposed to do then? For example, you know, we used to tell people try to exercise 2 to 3 days a week at a certain intensity for a certain duration. And then we changed it to try to just accumulate 30 minutes of activity over the course of the day, as many days of the week as you can. And the latest guidelines that just came out say, move more and sit less. So, you know, what people are kind of scratching their head like, well, what do I believe? And, you know, with exercise, with nutrition, a study comes out today that says this kind of exercise, this kind of diet is the best thing. Here's the research to prove it. Sorry, to support it. And then next week, another study will come out that will say just the opposite. And we're in the same boat. I mean, in the science of it, we're in the same boat. We're not, you know, we have to kind of look at, well, was that a good study? Was it not a good study? It got a lot of headlines because it showed something that was unusual or got the headline. But was it done well? Was it done right? And can we replicate it in other people in another sample? So, you know, we have the same problem with exercise that we do with nutrition and with just about everything else.
That's U of I Kinesia. Oh, yeah, sure. I was going to say, Cindy, go ahead. I was just going to ask you, Cindy, actually, about when it comes to nutrition. Stephen was saying how many headlines there are about exercise, but I feel like the data and the news stories and the studies are even more confusing when it comes to our food and our food consumption.
Absolutely. And I think you could talk to about 10 different professionals and get close to 10 different answers. But one thing I want people to know about is that U.S. World News Report has an amazing consumer service that they do every January. I don't know how long it's been available, but for a few years now anyway. It's fully available at no cost online, and it's a complete diet review done by a panel of legitimate health and medical experts. They rank diets from 1 to 10. They have a number of categories, and I can't even list them all to you, but I know there's a best overall, there's a best weight loss, and a best diet for diabetes, because those would be the ones I'm most interested in. It's an excellent tool for both professionals and individuals. It gives a review of the best of the best. The diet program that I worked with in a doctor's office for many years has been included for several years now as one of the top 10, but other high-ranking diets that are mentioned pretty much consistently year after year, in recent years anyway, is the DASH diet, the Mediterranean diet, Volumetrics, Ornish diet. I don't think the keto diet is anywhere on any of these lists.
What about Whole30? That's the other one everyone's talking about, right?
Whole30 is not on any of these lists either. And I think the reason probably is because Whole30 eliminates entire groups of food like dairy, and they suggest no grains, no legumes. Some of it I totally agree with, no sugar, no alcohol. But I personally wouldn't be a strong fan of any diet that arbitrarily eliminates entire food groups. That said, though, I know people who have used Whole30 once or twice a year. It's worked really well for them, and they're very happy with the results. They're all pretty young, and I hope when they're 50 and 60 years old, they don't have osteoporosis because it said no dairy products. But right now, they're in good health. They've lost weight, and they feel great. We all need to eat less. Americans in general are so overweight and eat so much, but it really isn't a real – there is really no simple answer. But I think that this particular diet review service by U.S. World and News is really helpful.
That's Cindy Yerkler. She's a registered dietitian in SIU School of Medicine. Stephen Petrozello is with us as well. He's a kinesiologist who teaches at U of I. If you want to join our conversation, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. If you have questions for Cindy or Stephen, that's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21STShow. We will look up that U.S. News and World Report list, by the way, and tweet that out for you guys. Cindy, can I just ask you one more diet question, which is the whole idea, I think everyone can agree on, or most people can agree on, you know, lots of sugar is bad, lots of alcohol is bad. It's most diets will say that it's good to eat fruits and vegetables. This is not the best time of year for fresh produce, especially if folks want to eat locally. What do you like to use this time of year to get more fruits and veggies into our diet in the winter?
Well, that's a great question. I actually don't agree that it's not a good time of year for fresh produce. Most of the supermarkets in my community, and I know my kids live in another state and in their communities, both the full-service high-end groceries and the discounted groceries offer amazing varieties of fresh fruits and vegetables year-round anymore. 5 years ago, that might not have been as true as it is now. But I know that most culinary experts would still tell you select in season for the best flavor and tastiness. So right now that would be winter vegetables and some fruits, things like cabbage and Brussels sprouts and sweet potatoes and apples and pears and any kind of root vegetable. But my experience is I can find tasty berries and grape tomatoes and even occasionally a melon at this time of year. My best advice about this is get to know your produce person in whatever store you shop in. They are amazing at helping select the best of the best. They know what to look for. And in a full-service grocery, they'll cut into items like a pineapple or a melon or an avocado and let you look at it and help you make a selection that's ripe and flavorful. But beyond that, I want to mention that a lot of people kind of stick their nose in the air at things like frozen produce. There's wonderful varieties of frozen produce available these days, things like riced cauliflower that can substitute for for actual rice, or zoodles, which are zucchini noodles. And there's just lots of combinations of these kinds of things. Along with the vegetables, sometimes they actually do put a grain in with it. And I'm not totally opposed to canned vegetables. They are higher in sodium for people who have to watch their blood pressure, and let's face it, we all need to watch our sodium intake, but they can be that you dump the juice off, you rinse the sodium, and sometimes that's just more affordable for and more available for people who are on food deserts, don't have access to good fresh produce.
Right, so it's a good idea what produce to think about this time of year. Stephen, what about exercising this time of year? Because it's winter. I mean, today's I think it's the high is 57 today,
yeah,
in
is it
Champaign,
winter?
Urbana. So I don't. It's a kind of a crazy January. It is raining, so I bet there's going to be a lot of people running around Champaign, Urbana today. What do you suggest in terms of movement, creative workouts, and then a big question you and I were talking about before we went on air: how important is weight training in all of this?
Well, you know, a big part of the whole equation is motivation. You know, this is always the time of year where people make that commitment to get fit, get healthy, and the key is to stick with it then. So one of the questions that people ask all the time is, what's the best kind of exercise to do? And I'm not trying to be flip about it, but the answer is what you will enjoy doing and stick with. You know, a lot of times people, you know, this time of year, it can be hard. You know, if it's a typical January, and I'm sure we're going to get our winter eventually, you don't want to go outside when it's really cold out, but you don't have to. Again, you don't have to go to a gym to get a workout. If you have a home...
You don't have to lift weights to weight train.
That is also true. you know, if you live in a home that has a basement or a second floor, you can walk up and down the stairs. I mean, that's exercise. We don't often think of it that way, but it is. You know, one of the funniest things I see is when people will drive to a gym and they'll take an elevator or an escalator from the lobby up to the workout floor to get on a treadmill or a Stairmaster. It's like, why would you do that when you've got a natural Stairmaster in a staircase? And you're right. You know, weight training doesn't have to be done with barbells or dumbbells or fancy machines. You know, you can do push-ups, do squats with body weight. Or you can pick up a gallon of milk and use that as a weight, as a resistance. So, you know, there anything we can do to get more movement into our daily routine is going to be helpful. You know, one of the questions that often comes up is, well, I've been doing this workout now. I've been working out for 6 months and I'm not seeing any change. And one of the things people have to realize is we're not going to change if we're doing the same thing over and over and over. We need to constantly kind of being increasing the resistance, the stress, the intensity of our workout, so that our body will adapt to it And that part of that adaptation involves sometimes weight loss or increased strength or better cardio, et cetera.
So lots of good advice there. I want to thank Stephen Petrozello in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois, SIU School of Medicine, Cindy Yerkler. Both of you, thank you for being with me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much, Nyla.
And I'm afraid we are out of time for today, but we'll see you back here tomorrow. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, and I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for tuning in.